Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go with a brand new week, the final week of the month of November 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to jump right into the vibrant, always topical, always interesting conversation in the Horn chat room. Just run right over there, click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name, pick yourself out a password, and bang, you're there. It's free, it's easy. Costs nothing to participate in the real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Thanksgiving week, and we're, like I said, downhill toward the end of November. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, everybody, you know this, that's where you go to find the interface for PayPal, and Well, I should mention that this is a short week, and it's the last week of November, so if we're going to finish November on proper, on task, on point, on schedule, whatever, then this evening, tomorrow, and Wednesday, the fundraising goal is $250, because no program Thursday, no program Friday. And I'd like to announce that Gary, the labor man, got us started this evening. I saw a note in the email, bobkincaid@gmail.com, from Gary. Pistachio challenge. Come on, folks. Y'all really need to try these nuts. They're unlike any you've had in the past. Great flavors available via Sparky Dunk. Signed, Gary, labor man. And, of course, he's referring to the pistachio and or ghost pepper cheese challenge. Your choice, ghost pepper cheese or pistachios. Pistachios coming in a wide variety of flavors, including, what, like chili lime and honey mustard and something, there's a whole bunch, let's put it that way. Even right down to just salty plain. Heck, there may even be unsalted for all I know. But for a $100 contribution, Sparky will send that straight away to you. So by all means, let me know if you want to participate and try these wonderful munchables, which would probably make for a nice little pass the bowl around during Thanksgiving evening, watching a football game and trying not to pass out at whatever from all the food kind of deal. Yeah, that's all there. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, of course, you will find, and so that means, pursuant to Gary's challenge, he's looking for somebody else to go get a bag of pistachios, or maybe three other people, because that would put us on the way toward taking care of this week's fundraising. So thank you very kindly, Gary. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you can run over and grab the easy pop-out player. And, it works delightfully if you're operating off a PC. Of course, if you're running on a mobile device of some sort, we recommend the apps from Stitcher, from TuneIn, and from uTunes. Oh, that's true. That's true. Sparky says, I can't get them out by Thanksgiving. But you know what? They're a great snack anytime. We probably should have thought about the Thanksgiving thing last week. Oh, well. There you go. Well, you know, but if you do it this evening, well, we'll figure it out. Wait, what? I know we're all waiting for the Ferguson announcement. And I don't know if she's kidding or not, but Carol just said the police are testing their water cannons. Jesus, I hope that was humor. I don't know anymore. This, of course, is Moran Monday. But before we go to the Morans part of things, thank you, Jeremy. Jeremy noting loud and clear on TuneIn. Much appreciated. Before we go to the Moran part of Moran Monday, I wanted to share a note with you that came in yesterday evening. Oh, dear. Carol says, I'm not kidding. It was not a joke. I didn't think it was. The cops are testing their water cannons in Ferguson because we're all waiting to see if there's a no true bill or not. And I'd say probably the odds are most people are betting on no true bill. Because, well, was it Langston Hughes who said justice delayed is justice denied? Well, this is the 21st century in Merca. And in 21st century Merca, justice denied is just justice denied. Justice is justice denied in certain quarters. Yeesh. Let's see. I got a note from Dr. John in yesterday in response to the note that came in Friday from different John. We have several people named John. You may recall that John had posited an inquiry that was taken up by the Friday on the Front Porch group regarding the nature of violence and humans. And since he was not listening live and was operating via the podcast, after the fact, Dr. John offered some insights, and they're certainly valid, and I think they deserve to be considered. So it was yesterday evening when I read the following and immediately knew I needed to share it with the Horn Family Commune congregation. Hey, Bob. I'm just getting caught up with Friday's program, and I'd like to beg your indulgence to jump into the old time machine and weigh in on the topic of violence, nonviolence, and human nature. You might want to mark this in the broadcast because this is some pretty heavyweight thinking, and it begs it. You know, you might want to just sort of ruminate on this a little bit, especially since here later in the program we're going to get into the full scale Moran onslaught, and you'll want to go back and maybe think about some non Moran stuff which this represents. On Friday, a consensus seemed to develop pretty quickly. The humans are, by nature, selfish and wicked. Twisted is how one person put it. The idea of a nonviolent society was dismissed by deploying what's called the freeloader argument. Violence is necessary because someone will always take advantage of the trust of others. I'd like to take these issues one at a time. First, nonviolence. It is a big mistake to think of nonviolence as merely the absence of violence. That implies violence is the natural order of things, a case of assuming that thing which you claim to be investigating, which of course is fallacious in nature. Nonviolence is a project that requires practice. I believe Gandhi and Dr. King made that very clear. Remember how Dennis Kucinich wanted to establish a Department of Peace and all the hooting right-wingers made such fun? Well, Dennis was right. Peace requires diplomats, policies, treaties, just like war does. There is a legitimate academic field called peace studies, which is premised on three things: international peacemaking, basically diplomacy from a nonviolent perspective, conflict resolution, which draws on knowledge from psych and social work, and environmental violence, which is, well, self-evident to the Horn family. I think, yes. Environmental violence is when, say, a group of people have lived for, say, 10,000 years in some hills, and sociopathic hillbilly gone bad. Well, I think the sociopathic presupposes the gone bad part. Anyway, Chris Klein goes up to the northern shore, the north woods of Wisconsin, and says, I want to blow up these hills that you've been living in for 10,000 years. That's environmental violence. And the poisoning of the water, the poisoning of the air, the poisoning of the community. This is all environmental violence. And if we understand something like what Chris Klein wants to do to the Pinoki Hills, or if we understand something like what the Koch brothers and their ilk and TransCanada and Keystone, whatever, want to do with the pipeline, and if we understand mountaintop removal as forms of violence as opposed to a disagreement over which kind of energy we should use, it transforms the debate significantly. So, yeah, environmental violence. John continues, my point here is just that nonviolence is not my... No, get it right, Bob. My point here is just that nonviolence has an actual meaning beyond the absence of violence, and a lot of people have spent a lot of time defining it and working for it. Thus, it probably begs further study and consideration on our part in this community. Second, about human nature. Everybody seems to have an idea about what is natural for humans. And I will add editorially that quite often what is presumed to be natural for humans winds up to be a reflection of what individuals think is natural for them. In much the same way that people's deities wind up being very similar in nature to they themselves. John continues. I should probably not editorialize through all this so that the whole idea can come through. Are we by nature violent or nonviolent? Are we by nature selfish or cooperative? This is a thorny issue with no clear answer. Anybody who tells you it's been settled is misinformed or selling something. The best we can do is weigh evidence from several lines of inquiry, including ethnology, genetics, primatology, and archaeology. In short, what are living human societies like? What's in our genes? What do our primate cousins do? And what did humans do in the past? These are lessons from nature. Or there are lessons from nature. The assumption is that if we look at non-human primates in the wild and through careful captivity studies, we can learn about the sorts of behaviors that are favored among intelligent human-like creatures living small group foraging lifestyles in a forest or savanna environment. In other words, the sort of conditions under which most of human evolution took place. Does that sort of lifestyle favor violence or cooperation? Does it favor selfishness or sharing? A fabulous and accessible introduction to this is Franz de Waal's The Age of Empathy. De Waal, a brilliant primatologist, presents lots of evidence that cooperation, not competition, leads to stronger primate bonds, greater reproductive success, and better in-group cohesion. In other words, it's the sharing monkeys that are more successful, not the selfish and violent monkeys. There are lessons from non-Western societies. Anthropologists have spent decades living with groups like the Kung San foragers of the Kalahari, the various Inuit Arctic foragers, and pastoral groups of Eastern Africa to see what life is actually like in small-scale societies. Societies that are similar, not just similar, to those in which humanity came of age. Is there violence in these groups? Yes. Is it anything like violence in modern Western nation-states? Absolutely not. Rule breakers exist in every human society we've studied. Notice the word studied. I'm not assuming things here. I'm basing this claim on actual observational science. The funny thing about rule breakers in non-Western small-scale foraging societies, again, like those in which we spent most of our evolution, i.e. a natural human state, is that they are punished by banishment. Bad people are typically excluded from the group. this is tantamount to a death sentence unless the rule breaker can convince another group to take him in. The point is simple. Cooperation, society, community are survival mechanisms that are baked into the recipe for being human. We need others to survive. And you don't build alliances by being violent or selfish. I said before that there's no answer to the question of what is human nature, and I seem to have given an answer. But what I presented is my considered conclusion based on the facts as I understand them. I hope it's taken as such. This, of course, raises the question of why we are so violent and selfish, if it really is unnatural. Ask then, and John says I'd answer that question by posing one. What do we have that, say, the San of the Kalahari do not? Lexuses and Cheerios and iPhones and hospitals. That's all true. But it's on the surface. What's deeper? The concept of property. And property is the sine qua non of capitalism, which spurs competition and from which grows inequality. To claim that violence and selfishness are natural human states is to back project capitalism into humanity's deep past, which is both ahistorical and deeply political, whether one realizes it or not. John says, I don't want to come off as too critical or make it sound like I'm calling out anybody from Friday, because he's not. But the discussion touched on something that I consider myself fairly hip to, at least something I've spent a lot of time reading and writing about, and I wanted to contribute some thoughts. My best to the whole commune, signed Dr. John. I don't think that comes off as critical of anybody. I think it comes off as considered and a further participation in a larger conversational exercise. And we need to be thinking about these kinds of things. Because, as John later pointed out, other people are. Other people most assuredly are. Other people who take positions opposite that which I think John has right, and instead argues the other side that, oh, well, you know, we're just a bunch of violent monkeys. Well, if we were that violent, we never would have made it. And violence does not lead to evolutionary success. Violence for the sake of violence, it simply doesn't. So lo and behold, earlier today, and this guy the person he's talking about is a moron, so we can ease our way into Moron Monday. Over at Scientific American, and this is what John sent along, and I'm vamping because the computer's being a pain in the ass. Yo, one of these days. This is an article by John Horgan, who is not a moron, who points out, and I think this bears reading, because it bears thinking about this week. Not everybody sees this as a week for giving thanks, just like not everybody sees Columbus Day as a reason to celebrate. John Horgan says, when I was in grade school, my classmates and I wore paper Indian headdresses and pilgrim hats and reenacted the first Thanksgiving in which supposedly friendly Native Americans joined pilgrims for a fall feast of turkey, venison, squash, and corn. This episode seemed to support the view, often, apparently erroneously, attributed to the 18th century philosopher Jean-Jacques Rousseau, of Native Americans, other pre-state people, as peaceful, noble savages. Many prominent scientists now deride depictions of pre-state people as peaceful. Contra left, and this is a quote from Steven Pinker in 2007. Steven Pinker is a darling of the right wing, a darling of people who think that, well, you know, I mean, we white folks, we stole all this fair and square, damn it. Contra-leftist anthropologists who celebrate the noble savage, quantitative body counts such as the proportion of prehistoric skeletons with axe marks and embedded arrowheads or the proportion of men in contemporary foraging tribes who die at the hands of other men, suggest that pre-state societies were far more violent than our own. You see, they need that, people like Pinker. They need it. Because by using it, by claiming that, they can engage in a sort of ex post facto reconstruction that reaches back and says, well, you know, property acquisition and capitalism and competition, that's just how we are as human beings, and you know, God gave it to us. Well, Mr. Horgan says, yes, Native Americans waged war before Europeans showed up. The evidence is especially strong in the American Southwest, where archaeologists have found numerous skeletons with projectile points embedded in them and other marks of violence. War seems to have surged during periods of drought. But as I have asserted in my book, The End of War, and on the Scientific American site, Pinker and other Hobbesians, you know, Hobbes was the one who said that life is nasty, brutish, and short, have greatly exaggerated the extent of warfare among early humans. They have replaced the myth of the noble savage with the myth of the savage savage. Then Mr. Horgan presents the following, as we contemplate Thanksgiving week. In two momentous early encounters, Native Americans greeted Europeans with kindness and generosity. Here's how Christopher Columbus described the Arawak tribal people living in the Bahamas. We talked about this a month back. They brought us parrots and balls of cotton and spears and many other things, which they exchanged for the glass beads and hawksbills. They willingly traded everything they owned. They do not bear arms and do not know them, for I showed them a sword. They took it by the edge and cut themselves out of ignorance. With 50 men, we could subjugate them all and make them do whatever we want. We could make them acquire property for us. We could make them property. How that passage, which I found in historian Howard Zinn's 1980 classic, People's History of the United States, we miss you, Howard, captures the whole sordid history of colonialism. Columbus was as good as his word. Within decades, the Spaniards had slaughtered almost all the Arawaks and other natives of the new Indies and enslaved the few survivors. The cruel policy initiated by Columbus and pursued by his successors resulted in complete genocide. The historian Samuel Morrison, who admired Columbus, wrote, then there's New England. New England becomes the focal point this time of year because of the first Thanksgiving. The fact of the matter is, the Plymouth colonists cruised up and down the coastline, and they selected Plymouth because it was already all laid out and ready for them. No, 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 no. The aliens had not set up a nice little town site for the pilgrims. The people who had been living there for 10,000 years had. Only they were dead, mostly. By the time the pilgrims arrived, those crazy fundamentalists, arrived in 1620. Plague had ravaged most of eastern North America, a term we will use for want of better. The plague that had ravaged had come from white people who had had periodic contact. Well, you know, the Spanish, De Soto, went up through, and the disease wiped out millions before who never even saw a white man. And so it was something like, I don't know, it was the scene in North America was something like something from, you know, The Day After Tomorrow or some apocalypse where, you know, all the towns are just empty, but all the shelves are stocked with food and there's everything you need there to set up a happy existence. What few natives did survive. Charitably and decently and out of a sense of community helped the pilgrims to survive because they would have starved. Because remember, among other things, they were very busy with their praying and their preachifying and their speechifying and their building stocks and dunking stools and things like that to punish members of the community who weren't sufficiently sacred or holy or faithful or what have you. The natives saved the Plymouth colony. That much is true about the first Thanksgiving. What we don't get around to telling the rest of is that the white folks then turned around and went back into their genocidal frenzy. Mr. Horgan, John Horgan, closes his article at Scientific American saying, "The Arawak and Wampanoag were kind to us, and by us I mean people of European descent. We showed our thanks by sickening, subjugating, and slaughtering them, and we have the gall to call them more savage than us. Happy Thanksgiving!" Yeah. Let me check in the chat room. Okay, still nothing coming out of Ferguson. Ferguson, yeah, I mean, the way I figure it, they will, the authorities in Ferguson will wait until probably 15 minutes after total dark, and then they'll make their announcement and start shooting. Or truncheoning, or whatever. I also would like to point out that this is a momentous day. As noted, the 24th day of November, 2014. And this comes via our dear friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com and Your RDA of Irony. For several years, and I believe he's retiring with the close of this Congress. Rush Holt, congressman from New Jersey and son of West Virginia even, who also happens to be a nuclear scientist, you know, a real intelligent person in that body comprised of fewer and fewer of them. Rush Holt would sponsor a bill to make Charles Darwin's birthday a national holiday. I support the idea. But there's more to Charles Darwin than just his birthday, and this is that. November 24th, Eugene writes, "What was Charles Darwin writing? It had been 5 years since he had mesmerized Victorian society with his latest revelation on the life of barnacles, a monograph on the fossil Balanidae and Verrucidae of Great Britain. Yes, it was a hard act to follow. The public was insatiable, and Darwin himself was daunted by the prospect. But after four treatises on barnacles, the critics were starting to dismiss Darwin as a one subclass of crustaceans hack. One trick barnacle? I don't know. That hurt. He did have some notes from a sea voyage that he had taken 20 years earlier, and he had long pondered his observations of the wildlife of the Galapagos. That was it. Darwin would write a cookbook of finch recipes. The Galapagos natives had dozens of ways to prepare the bird, and the cuisine varied from island to island. In fact, he was amazed by the number and disparity of recipes. How and why did they originate? Darwin concluded there was a scientific explanation for the evolution of all cuisines, an evolutionary process called nutritional selection. And so Darwin presented his theory in On the Origin of Spices. By no coincidence, the daguerreotypes of the prepared dishes would showcase the tableware of a certain British manufacturer, but that flagrant product placement was the least that the grandson of Josiah Wedgwood could do for his trust fund. Unfortunately, the publisher rejected Darwin's manuscript, explaining, "The English public's never been interested in food, but we do love an animal story. Perhaps if you rewrote your work with an emphasis on the finches, and without eating the more likeable ones, I'm sure you could do for those plucky little fellows what you've done for the barnacles." So adapting his work to the publisher's whims, how else can a writer survive? Charles Darwin wrote Origin Twist, The Evolutionary Adventures of Phineas Finch. Yeah, all right, it didn't quite happen that way. Although the gentle Mr. Darwin might have found it a more congenial approach to introduce evolution to Victorian society, Darwin had no delusions as to the public reaction to On the Origin of Species, the outrage, the personal attacks, and the less than flattering caricatures of Clint Punch. At least the Church of England could not burn him at the stake. In fact, the dread of the ensuing controversy had deterred Darwin for many years from publishing his research on evolution. He probably hoped to avoid it altogether, keeping evolution a secret among the scientific community. Yes, Darwin did not discover evolution. He merely divulged it. By the 19th century, science had become increasingly skeptical of the Bible's explanation for creation. I'm sharing this with you for a reason. If nothing else, the growing variety of fossils was raising doubts and questions. Geologists discovered fish skeletons in rock layers on mountains. Genesis did not explain that. Biologists were finding ample evidence of extinct species. Had Adam killed them all, or had the animals drowned in Noah's flood? But science preferred to regard the accumulating data as anecdotes on a ribald topic that would only shock the public. If evolution was science's dirty secret, then Charles Darwin was, to put it in a 60s context, the kid with the best collection of Playboys. With his studies on geology, British barnacles, and the wildlife of the Galapagos, he was the acknowledged expert on you-know-what. Among his scientist friends, he was even sharing his theory of an underlying principle of, not to be said aloud, evolution. Of course, he knew and dreaded the reaction if his theory ever became public. Natural selection was tantamount to denying God's precise blueprint of creation. Darwin was an affable man of fragile health, so he lacked both the temperament and the strength for controversy. To avoid the uproar, he was quite content to keep the theory a secret among friends. It remained so for more than 10 years until 1856, when Darwin found himself forced to choose between infamy and obscurity. That year, Darwin learned that a young British naturalist in Borneo had arrived at a theory of evolution based on a natural selection of the fittest member of a species. This unexpected rival, Alfred Russel Wallace, could not have known of Darwin's long-standing but secret theory. The two men did not frequent the same drawing rooms. However, using the same empirical perspective, Wallace simply had arrived at the same conclusion as Darwin. Furthermore, being young and unestablished, Wallace was not the least reticent about being the center of controversy. He contacted the British scientific societies about his proposed paper on evolution, and that news reached Darwin. Even then, Darwin was loath to react and risk any uproar. He first wanted to see what Wallace actually had to say. Ironically, within a year, he knew. Wallace had written to him with an outline of his ideas. In his communications with the scientific community, Wallace had been told of Darwin's expertise in evolution. So, looking for guidance, the chicken wrote to the fox. In fairness to Darwin, he never discouraged or disparaged Wallace. He analyzed his rival's work with remarkable and laudable objectivity. Wallace actually appreciated Darwin's help and continued the correspondence, never realizing he had goaded Darwin into writing his own work on the subject. Evolution was no longer going to be a secret. Darwin had long hoped to avoid the controversy, but he would be damned if Wallace's research would take precedence over his. Resigned to the infamy, Charles Darwin finally published his findings on the Origin of Species on November 24th, 1859. As for Wallace's barely remembered role in history, survival of the fittest apparently applies to scientists, too. And now you know the rest of the story. Little horse molester Paul Harvey. I miss Bart Cop. I need to say that every now and then. I miss Bart Cop. And so, lo and behold, a little background on Alfred Russel Wallace. Dr. John tells us he wasn't ignored. The paper before the Royal Society that laid out the theory was actually credited to both of them. Wallace did become sort of a mystical weirdo later in life, which might have something to do with it. He was also an anti-eugenicist, a radical socialist, and from a poor family, all of which kept him on the margins of better British scientific society of the day. Oh, by the way, you just think I toddle along and I forget what day it is and right.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up, step right up. You will not believe your ears. Behind this thin cybernetic veil of canvas are right-wing morons of all manner. That's right, it's Moran Monday on the horn. We have birther morons, deather morons, tenther mag morons, booger-eating morons, bircher morons, libertarian morons, repig-licking morons, one and all. Yes, indeed. You can't tell the morons without a program, and this is the program that tells the morons. You just can't tell them much. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in morons.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes, you will. Everything that has just gone before is set up. Enter Ken Ham. We're still holding Australia responsible for this. Sorry, Robert. Sorry, John. Ken Ham, who's the photograph of whom that I'm looking at here, has him apparently sitting with a TARDIS and a bunch of other Doctor Who stuff. Don't know why. Not a clue. Oh, dear God. Checking in on the chat room. Governor Jay Nixon of Missouri is at the podium congratulating the police already. The announcement of the decision by the grand jury, whatever it is, will come in according to Benny in the chat room, will come at 8 p.m. Central Time, 9 p.m. Eastern. Huh. That's the damnedest thing. Most grand jury announcements go out morning, afternoon. Seldom does the grand jury complete its work early in the morning, and they hold off the announcement till 9 o'clock. I don't think they're doing that for Rachel Maddow or Anderson Cooper and his Calliope. Or whoever's on chair 9. Yeah, let's clear that up real quick. I've seen this a couple of times in the chat room. This is not a verdict that's coming. This is a grand jury presentment. A grand jury presentment is a matter of the prosecutor taking evidence to a grand jury, which is usually larger than a pettit jury. Pettit juries are often either 6 or 12, but apparently the grand jury in this case, or in St. Louis County, is 12 people. In West Virginia, it's usually around 18 on a state basis. I'm not sure about God, I think it could get up into the 30s with a federal court. But anyway, a prosecutor will present evidence, and it's usually quite one-sided, will present evidence to the grand jury of a crime and who they think did the crime. The grand jury merely considers the question of, is it more likely than not, that's called the standard of proof, is it more likely than not that a crime was committed? And if it is, in fact, more likely than not that a crime was committed, is it also more likely than not that the person who is being charged with the crime is the person who committed the crime? More likely than not, consider that as a standard of proof that is 50.0001%. Just barely over the line. Now, maybe the grand jury thinks it's a lead pipe cinch. Maybe they're 100% certain. Doesn't matter. All an indictment says is that it is more likely than not that a crime was committed, and that it is more likely than not that the crime charged was committed by the person named in the indictment. That low standard is why there is that's why the old saying exists that a determined prosecutor can indict a ham sandwich. And they then and then the case proceeds from there. So, for instance, if you just take the bare bones that an 18-year-old young man who happened to be melanin enhanced, melanin rich, was gunned down with multiple shots from the firearm of a police officer who shot him. As the young man was unarmed, getting to that more likely than not stage is not very complicated. Unless, of course, the prosecutor wants to prevent it from happening, because the prosecutor is in absolute control of the grand jury. The judge isn't in the grand jury room, just the prosecutor, the court reporter, and whatever witnesses the prosecutor calls. Okay? Yeah. So that's how that process works. If a true bill, which is what an indictment is referred to, if a true bill is returned, it does not mean anything as to the guilt or innocence of Officer Darren Wilson. If no true bill is returned, all it says is that the grand jury, well, let's put it this way, there will be a no true bill is not an acquittal. It is not because a grand jury does not seek to find guilt or innocence. No jury in this country ever seeks innocence. That's probably worthy of a later conversation. You cannot, by any jurisdiction in this country, be found innocent. Among other things, the Associated Press style book still allows reporters to write that so-and-so was found innocent, and every time I read that in a newspaper or online or whatever, I throw things and swear. I made an inquiry one time, and the explanation given to me was that, well, it prevents journalists from making mistakes and saying guilty as opposed to not guilty, which are the only two possible verdicts apart from a hung jury. That's it, guilty or not guilty. But, you know, if the newspaper publishes guilty when it's not guilty, then there's some libel issues there, so it's easier to say innocent, even though that is a flagrant disregard of the system as it exists. Anyway, let's go back to the story at hand, although it's kind of difficult under these circumstances. Nothing's going to happen until 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Central, which is a rock-solid 2 hours and 18 minutes from now. Anyway, I shared all that information from Eugene Finnerman, by the way, the most brilliant historical satirist on the Internet. I shared that. You remember the lines in there where he wrote about, were the extinct species all because of Noah's flood, or did Adam eat them all? You know, that kind of. It is 2014. It is the second decade of the 21st century. Enter Australia's own Ken Ham, because I ain't claiming him. Who, for some reason or another, started hunting and pecking away at the keyboard at his blog called Answers in Genesis, which, of course, Genesis tells us actually nothing about historical humanity, but rather does tell us a lot about the people who wrote Genesis. Yeah, that was God. No. He's a wordy fella. Ken Ham is. But Ken Ham advocates for something that, and people trained in science will have a hissy at this. Ken Ham advocates for something called historical science. Historical science is what Ken Ham wants people to use to decide that Adam and Eve, who really existed, rode to church on the back of a dinosaur. Mm-hmm. Apparently he's been getting some heat about climate change, Ken Ham has. He's mad at scientists, whom he calls secularists. And he doesn't like the fact that they use observational science, which is, you know, science. Historical science is not science at all. I mean, if you want to use historical science, you can claim that you've got that fever and upper respiratory infection because of demons. Right?
They want people to have a wrong understanding of what the word science means. The secularists have spread their propaganda.
I suppose this means that scientists have noted that creationists are rather hard-pressed to believe in climate change when the world's only, 6,000 years old. Slightly younger than the written recipe for bread.
I want to emphasize that we do not deny climate change. What we do deny are the worldview-based assumptions behind the interpretations of what causes climate change. Climate change is observational science. We can observe it by recording measurements, but it needs to be interpreted as to why it's happening, and your starting point determines your interpretation. Starting from the Bible, we know that there was a global flood a few thousand years ago that completely changed Earth's surface and climate, and that the Earth is still settling down from this catastrophe. So, we should expect there to be some variations in climate change, but this is not alarming, and it is not the direct result of modern human activity.
Trust me, it doesn't sound any better if I just read it in straight Midwestern newspeak. You see, the scientists who believe in who follow observational science are all wrong. Thank God Dr. John is probably not listening live, because otherwise he'd be kicking things.
You see, you secularists, they make their first mistake, because they follow the idea that climates have been stable for thousands of years and are beginning to change since the advent of modern man. And yes, because of the effects of sin, the curse and the flood, we will continue to witness climate change until the Lord comes.
No, you've got. No, I wasn't. He said that. If you really were self-loathing enough to go to read his blog post, you could. There was a global flood a few thousand years ago, wiped out the dinosaurs. The flood was caused by sin. Sin, of course, was started by Eve. Yes. Because, the Almighty Creator of the universe put her here so that she could screw up the world for Adam. Because Adam was lonesome.
I'm the Almighty Creator of the universe, and you, Adam, are lonesome?
Well, you created me, God, and everything, and so that means you created loneliness, because I ain't sinned or nothing, and so of course I'm lonely.
Good Lord. No, bad Lord. 2014. Second decade thereof. Almost halfway through. And there are people out there pitching the notion of the short Earth creation. Oh my God. Yeah, Jeremy in Vermont.
What, Edith? Uh-huh. Sin and the effing flood, uh-huh.
Yeah, I didn't. I'm sorry, Jeremy. I didn't issue the hockey puck warning. My bad. Really bad. So, that seemed kind of at the top of the moron list for me. There are other morons. For instance, I just saw a note roll in on Facebook from Faith, and thank you, Faith, for your ongoing ongoing help in keeping this all going. Thank you, Faith. Faith noting, I gather that the mayor saying violence won't be tolerated, the mayor of St. Louis, I gather that the mayor saying violence won't be tolerated wasn't directed at the police. We now return you to your regularly scheduled obfuscation. No kidding. You know, you see this Ken Ham jackass, and you think to yourself, this is why we can't have nice things. I mean, this whole post begins with the query, are creationists science deniers? Well, no, except for the fact that we deny science because science says the Earth is more than 6,000 years old, and quite frankly, a whole lot older than the written recipe for bread, and older than the human species. Jackass. Meanwhile, in St. Louis, there is, since this is Moran Monday, there is another investigation going on into another shooting death. Now, the whole area has been, and I think the media have a big role to play in this, whipped into an absolute frenzy. And so does the Klan. The Klan has a role to play in this, passing out flyers saying, we will shoot people. And then going further to say that they will hang people and trotting out their usual litany of epithets. Business owners putting up plywood across windows as if some sort of hurricane is on the way. Police identify a 26-year-old woman as Becca Campbell. They were cruising along in an automobile near some vacant lots in downtown St. Louis. A 33-year-old man, unknown at this time by name, was driving the automobile when 26-year-old Becca Campbell, according to him, began waving a firearm around. Wolverines! And laughing about how they were ready for violence related to the grand jury decision in regard to Michael Brown. The man said, she declared, we're ready for Ferguson! Remember, she is waving a firearm around. The man who was driving the car said he ducked to keep from being in the, you know, path of any potential bullet emerging from the firearm. And he ducked. And at that point, he either nearly did or accidentally did strike the rear end of another vehicle. When the car crashed, the gun fired accidentally. We certainly do throw that word around a lot in the St. Louis area, don't we? And Becca Campbell, 26 years old, shot herself in the head. She died. Pathetic. The Tree of Liberty must from time to time be watered with the blood of 26-year-old paranoid women. It is its natural manure. Don't you love how way back when Thomas Jefferson referred to the victims of violence as manure? Of course, then again, well, that's what you are after you've been killed by gunfire. Or killed by much anything else. And what's the other phrase? Food for worms, worm fodder?
manure. Thanks, Tom.
Oh, it's going to be a... give me a busy evening. More in Mondays always are.
Let's travel over to Maryland,
where John Kevin Wood, a former U.S. Marine, says they're going to sue a high school, La Plata High School in particular, in Maryland. John Kevin Wood had himself a short enough hissy last month. Because his precious lumpkin daughter is taking world history. Oh, but sorry. Get the hockey puck out. Just tear off several straps of the lengths of the duct tape and just kind of hang them there on the table or whatever. You're going to need them. Last month, John Kevin Wood said he would unleash a shit storm on La Plata High School over there in Charles County, Maryland. Because in Precious Lumpkin's world history class, they was a studying Islam. You know, Muslim things. They happened to be engaged in studying a unit on the rise of the Middle Eastern empires in centuries gone by. Mm-hmm. You know, the powers that were there to oppose the Crusaders when they came in from Europe to attack the Levant. Vice Principal Shannon Morris took the call from Kevin Wood. Shannon Morris inquired of world history teacher Katie O'Malley Simpson, who said, "We've never had a problem with this in the past. This assignment's been given for years." So then La Plata High School Principal Evelyn Arnold put out a no trespass order against Kevin Wood. She said, "We don't file no trespassing charges lightly. We'd only do that when we feel someone has threatened the safety of staff and students." Mr. Wood, and I use the term lightly, said, My daughter shouldn't be forced to study some religion she don't believe in. Wolverines! I mean, they could give her an alternate curriculum where there ain't no Islam and there ain't no Islam empires and stuff. I'm a Marine! I fought for your freedom! Freedom isn't free! Kevin Woods went on to say that he told, really, not kidding, he told Vice Principal Morris, "I told her straight up you could take that Muslim loving piece of paper and shove it up your white ass. If students can't practice Christianity in STU, they should not be allowed to practice Islam in STU. They're violating her constitutional rights, and I'm going to bring down a shit storm on them like they've never seen." Really? An ex-Marine with pretty obvious issues. Thinks his 17-year-old daughter's constitutional rights are being violated by having to study history. Which is reminiscent of another thing that is on the list of today's Moran Monday. An editorial cartoon published in the Indianapolis Star newspaper. A guy by the name of Gary Varvel, that of course is bound to be an old Cherokee or Shawnee or maybe Chickasaw word, name, Varvel. Sure it is. Gotta be. He penned a cartoon that has a bunch of sort of dark tan people climbing through the window. And, of course, the father has on a checked shirt and a red ball cap and a big bushy mustache, and they're all kind of dark tan, whereas the people sitting at the table are a nice peachy pink. And the guy at the table says, thanks to the president's immigrant, and he's standing there with a Thanksgiving turkey, and he's getting ready to set it on the table. Thanks to the president's immigration order, we'll be having extra guests this Thanksgiving. So they caught some hell for it. How did the Indianapolis Star respond? They had Gary Varvel take the mustache off of the brownish tan guy with the red ball cap. Meanwhile, the brownish tan woman with the black hair, who's waving and smiling and sticking her leg through the window of the God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, God-fearing Christian home of the white people, well, she's still there, but the mustache disappeared. Oddly enough, that didn't satisfy people. So then they just pulled it all together. The Indianapolis Star did, saying, on Friday we posted a Gary Varvel cartoon at IndyStar.com. that offended a wide group of readers. Many of them labeled it as racist. Gary did not intend to be racially insensitive in his attempt to express his strong views about President Barack Obama's decision to temporarily prevent the deportation of millions of immigrants living and working illegally in the United States, but we erred in publishing it. Oh, F me. The cartoon depicted an immigrant family climbing through a window of a white family's home as Thanksgiving dinner was served. I was uncomfortable with the depiction when I saw it after it was posted. Wait, what? You're the editor and you didn't see it before it was posted? You're the editor, and stuff gets published before you see it? I got that right? That's an editor?
You keep using the word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Me either. Yeah, I was uncomfortable with the depiction when I saw it after it was posted. We initially decided to leave the cartoon posted to allow readers to comment because material can never truly be eliminated once it's circulating on the web. But we are removing the cartoon from the opinion section of our website, as well as an earlier version posted on Facebook that showed one character with a mustache. Damn. And yes, of course, Gary Varvel does work in Talibandiana. So, anybody surprised? Because Gary Varvel has some deeply held beliefs about them illegals.
In a world,
what the was that? Shut up. Horst, I was taught that's how the word's pronounced. Bless you, Bob. You're the first and only person in the last 20 years I've heard pronounce the word erred correctly. E-R-R-E-D. You know what? That's one of those lessons that was taught with a will. Not a whip or anything, but a will. So, we can't have people studying the Muslims. Because the next thing you know, they'll be sneaking over the dry part of the Rio Grande with their ISIL Ebola and going through the windows of perfectly God-fearing, decent white people in Taliban, Indiana. So now, no, really, now, the John Kevin Wood family has announced that they're going to sue La Plata High School for teaching history. Now, after John Kevin Wood said, I'm going to release a shit storm on that, stick that paper right up her white ass, which is what he said, they are feeling persecuted, the Wood family are. The school's actions not only dishonored John Wood's service, but the service of all men and women in our armed forces who defended our nation from Islamic violence. The family didn't say that. No, no, no. The Christian Thomas More Law Center said that. Because they're the free lawyers. Free lawyers that are going to represent the Wood family in suing La Plata High School for teaching the history of the Middle East, which includes the fact that, try to teach the history of Europe without teaching about Roman Catholicism. Try to teach the history of the Byzantine Empire without teaching Greek Orthodoxy. You just try. Let me know how that works out. The Christian Thomas More Law Center says, well, they're teaching about the Islams and the part in that history book about the Islams says that the Islams believe there's no God but Allah. It's Islamic indoctrination. This might be a time to examine the fact that the Christian Thomas More Law Center is a 501c3 charitable organization, I'm almost certain, which means that they're basically welfare sucks off the public teat. They call themselves the Christian Thomas More Law Center.
Christian response to the ACLU.
And the Wood family got really upset when Precious Lumpkin had to learn that Allah is the same God that we call God and the Jews call Jehovah or whatever it is they call him. It ain't the same God. And they taught about how women's is treated in Islam-Muslim societies. According to the Christian Thomas More Pettifogging Law Center, Wood witnessed firsthand the destruction caused in the name of Allah and knows Islam is not a religion of peace. He served in Operation Desert Shield, Desert Storm, and lost friends in that action. On 9/11, Wood responded as a firefighter to the smoldering Pentagon. Mr. Wood, you dumbass. If you actually served in Iraq, you witnessed firsthand destruction caused in the name of God. That president you probably voted for, George W. Dimleader Bush, he said, hey, God told me to strike Saddam, and I did. Well, you were one of the little itty-bitty
fingers of God that was over there causing all that destruction. That wasn't Allah, John, you dipshit.
Meanwhile, the welfare sucks over at Thomas More Law Center, sucking up our tax dollars with their tax-deductible donations, said, "True to his Marine training, John Wood stood his ground. He did not retreat, yet his daughter has received a failing grade in her world history class, but the story is not over yet." Volume 2 of This Is Why We Can't Have Nice Things.
What history?
The sick, twisted, psychopathic, sociopathic, dangerously depraved Christians are trying to rewrite history itself. She received a failing grade in her world history class, Precious Lumpkin did, because she didn't do the work. Now, she didn't have to turn in any work that said, "There is no God but God. There's no Allah but Allah. Oh, I got a burqa, okay? I got my head wrapped up in the headgear and shit. Okay, give me an A." She didn't have to do that. She didn't have to say that any doctrine or any dogma was correct, or even doctrine or dogma. She merely had to turn in an assignment about the history of the rise of the Islamic empires. You know, the ones that spread with the history of Islam, you know, up out of Mecca and Medina, through the Arabian Peninsula, across up into Mesopotamia, over into what is now Iran, Persia, Afghanistan, spread down through Southeast Asia, spread up through out of Mesopotamia over to the Levant, into Egypt, parts of Africa, spread into India, spread into what we now recognize as Turkey / Asia Minor, and yes, was finally stopped at the gates of Vienna and over in the Iberian Peninsula. But it's okay to know that. I mean, hell, you'd think that a good, God-fearing, upstanding patriot like John Kevin would want her to know that. See, they tried to destroy Europe. And we wouldn't have no white traditions of being good, upstanding, God-fearing, Christian white people if we hadn't stopped them. And you know what the sad thing is? This jackass, this self-important, benighted, drop-dead, dirt-ignorant jackass, and his religious persecution complex freak lawyers will have their day in court. And when they're done, and when the school system there has spent God knows how many thousands of dollars in taxpayer money defending a suit that at its base cannot be thought to be anything but frivolous and harassing and done for improper purposes, all they'll do is lose. And they'll appeal. And they'll lose again and appeal and lose. Until eventually, maybe this will find its way to the Supreme Court of the United States, where the rats, Roberts, Alito, Thomas, and Scalia, Kennedy, will say, "No, she doesn't lose. They have a deeply held religious belief, and dumbass, ignorant people have a right to have ignorant history taught to them. Ignorant people have a right to dictate the curriculum in this country because Merca! Wolverines!" When in fact what should happen is at the trial court level, the court should dismiss the case, should then hold a hearing on the amount of money possessed by the Christian Thomas More Law Center, and then impose what are called Rule 11 sanctions, or whatever it's called in Maryland, on the Christian Thomas More Law Center for every goddamn nickel they have, and make sure that they no longer trouble the court systems of this country with this kind of specious, hate-filled foolishness. There's not an other side of this coin. There's not a but maybe John Kevin Wood has a point side to this discussion. This idiot, this jackass, this man who does not know enough about world history or even apparently American history or even the history of the war in which he fought, who apparently doesn't have enough brains to put his shoes on without help, is going to be allowed to cost cost the taxpayers of that county and that school district ungodly amounts of money in litigation. And it is done for no other purpose than harassment to show that Christians rule this country, right down to our history. How many times have I said on this program that the First Amendment has become nothing more than a life support system for the religion industry? Jumping Jehoshaphat. I just looked up and realized how much of a filibuster I've been on. I want to thank Tosh for kicking in this evening on the fundraising, going halfway on what Gary, our buddy Laborman, did. So we've got $100 to go this evening on fundraising for tonight. If we could go further than that, it would be wonderful. But we've got $100 more to raise this evening. Thank you very, very kindly. Of course, it is More In Monday. And it goes without saying that conversation radio only works if there's conversation. So it's probably time that I remind you of the phone number. If you want to involve yourself in the conversation, try area code 304-663-4676. That's the Gizmo line, 304-663-4676. Or you can try the other line, which is 304-574-8178, or you can reach out Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Horn, Bob Kincaid Horn. If you've never done that, just send me a contact request, and we'll get going right away. Let me see something here.
Great second half, got it.
Okay, why do I have football audio in my... it drives me crazy. Now, this will take a minute. I gotta... Oh, that didn't do it. Now, give me a minute here. Every time I think, I don't need to restart the machine just before showtime, it's behaving perfectly. No. Get this sorted out in a second. promise. No, I'm still on the air and everything.
Work on a new.
Dadgummit. First of all, a little word. Whoever is out there that makes audio start rolling on a website just because you go to it needs to be thoroughly chastised. It is as if they have no regard whatsoever for maybe people with metered mobile plans. No, we're just going to eat up your bandwidth because we can. Jackasses. Anyway. Let's take a break. You light up the phones. We'll do some conversation radio on More and Monday on the Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
To find you with the working girls in the county.
Love Steely Dan. Just love them. 24th day of November 2014, Moran Monday edition of The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And I'm going to the phones just in a second, but take a minute. Take a minute, and just on that last story of that jackass out of Maryland. Try to imagine, if you can, how that whole thing got started. Precious Lumpkin comes home from high school. And says, and Daddy says, "Well, Precious Lumpkin, what'd they teach you in the school today?" And she says, "Well, Daddy, we're learning about the Islamic empires of the Middle East in the Middle Ages." "You're what?" "Oh, Daddy, don't get like this again. It's like when you go screaming in the night and I wake up and I find you standing over in bed with a goddamn gun. Daddy, don't do this." Oh, Jesus. "I fought in the Desert Storm in there. I know the destruction that worse than that Allah can cause, Precious Lumpkin." "Oh, Daddy, just pass the gravy." Hey, welcome to the program. Hello.
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 Hey.
Tracy?
I'm sorry, I didn't. Yes, it's the long lost, you know, person me. So, hi, Bob.
Hi, Tracy.
How the hell are you?
Oh, just trying to stave off an aneurysm at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still, we're, of course, awaiting what's happening in Ferguson out here also. And I did not realize, because I tend to block out unpleasant stuff out of my mind, that this has been, that this grand jury has been doing this for 3 months. And I'm sorry, I mean, typically, how long does it usually take for a grand jury to be impaneled, seated, and do a verdict?
Well, I mean, a grand jury sits until a grand jury is done with its work. But in
I've never heard of it going 3 months, though, have you?
Well, the grand jury sits technically, or I don't know, maybe not in Missouri, but a grand jury sits technically for the entire term of the court.
I see what you're saying.
But mostly,
depending on,
but
they don't usually take this long.
But you have to, you have to pay your grand jurors every day. So you want to get them in, get them out, get done.
Right.
But because, you know, because this thing is being run, I don't know, like some sort of a carnival show.
I think the Keystone Cops have something to do with it.
Well, yeah, and because this is, because the prosecutor has no interest in justice whatsoever, this thing is being run as a fraud, and it just is. If the prosecutor had wanted anything but a specific outcome, he would have gone in, presented the evidence, and would have been done. Because there was not...
Done.
No. So, you know, I mean, the fact that they're announcing it at 8 p.m. Central Time, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific is kind of outrageous all by itself.
Yeah. It is just, I'm at the point where I'm just, it is ridiculous because, like you said, it's like if they were coming, obviously what they're coming up with is not either, there's two things happening in the grand jury. That they're coming, the grand jury actually came up with a bill of indictment, and the prosecuting attorney does not want that, and he's like, well, keep going back to just get what they want, or they are not indicting him, and then waiting for all hell to break loose.
I tend to come down on the second one. Carol points out via a message to me just now, she says, I assure you, they were waiting for the weather to turn cold, and they're waiting until dark because police can do a lot under the cover of darkness.
Oh, yeah. They can get away with a hell of a lot of stuff at night because, like you said, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, here's I got something for you that to make you laugh.
Okay, goody.
Conservative pundit says Gates 20,000 partners in their short, miserable lives.
Try again.
You heard me. Conservative pundits, gays, sleep with up to 20,000 partners in their short, miserable lives. Lord Christopher Hopton, a columnist for the far right,
oh,
World
God, that,
Net Daily,
oh.
today came to some, this is my Moran Mundy nominee, came to the defense of an Australian politician, Rosalie Christini, who is trying to pass a law to prevent her local government from mentioning LGBTQ issues and holding diversity training. Mopkin, what a funny name.
Well, yeah, and he's a notorious climate denier, too, climate science.
Oh, he's
denier.
One of those? Okay.
Yeah.
Who derisively refers to LGBT community as curity, I guess, like the typewriter letters. Like the keyboard layout said that Christini discovered during a consultation that an expert on non-heterosexual lifestyles that homosexuals had an average of 500 to 1,000 partners in their sexually active lifetime. That sum has many as 20,000.
Yes, Tracy.
I'm still so left out.
Well, imagine how the straight people feel.
Oh, because according to this, I'm down by 19,999.
Yeah, you got a lot of work to do.
I got a lot of catching up to do.
Meanwhile, over here on the straight side of the street, apparently the rest of us got ripped off by Wilt Chamberlain.
Exactly. I had to read that because I figured that you guys would get a nice good chuckle out of that.
How do you say 20,000 sex partners and short, miserable lives in the same sentence?
Exactly. And so the person that's writing the article says, one wonders how they found time for anything else. Well, we also have this minister out here in Lancaster, California, that say that women who sleep with men outside of marriage are dirty dish rags.
Yes, yes.
So,
in fact, we had that audio last week, I think.
Oh, I missed that? Oh,
yeah.
Geez. So apparently, my question is, and this has always tickled me about that double standard thing, so if the women are dirty dish rags, what are the men? Because, you know, one must realize that if you're accusing women of being dirty dish rags and having sex because they're having sex with these men, then apparently somebody, you know, so the men are just what, you know, victims of the dirty dish rag women?
Well, see, I may actually have an answer to that question.
God. Please enlighten me, because I missed that.
You got
audio
you got
on
well
one,
you
so.
you got your hockey puck right, because I mean you're going to be all
yeah.
In a minute.
Okay, go for it.
So there's a guy who does radio over in the UK.
Okay.
His name is Nick Conrad.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick Conrad was talking about a case in which an athlete from Wales by the name of Ched Evans recently mm-hmm. was let out of prison. He served 2 years for raping a 19-year-old woman.
Okay, and he only got 2 years. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, what does that work out in terms of time per sperm? Never mind.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think science can measure it. So now he's back. After 2 years in prison for rape, he's back to practicing with Sheffield United, the team he plays for.
Oh, so he gets to rape a person and get his job back?
Right. But okay. But we haven't gotten to the hockey puck part.
Oh, but wait, there's more.
But wait, there's more. Yes, this is Bronco, K-Tel, whatever.
I have hot coffee in my hand, Bobby, gentle.
Okay, put it in the cup holder.
I can't. I got to wake up for class.
Because if you don't put the coffee down, you know, well, I can't
be
responsible.
Okay, I'll put the coffee down. I'll put the coffee
so,
down.
So Nick Conrad on BBC said the following.
Oh, Jesus.
I think women need to be more aware of a man's sexual desire. That when you're in that position, if you're about to engage in sexual activity, there's a huge amount of energy in the male body. There's a huge amount of will and intent. It's very difficult for many men to say no when they're whipped up into a bit of a storm. It's about, it's the old adage about if you yank a dog's tail, then don't be surprised when it bites you. In their fury against men and masculinity, they actually forget to stop and say if you tease, if you jump into bed naked with a man, if you give him all the signals and then he acts upon them, then you're partially responsible. If you don't wish to give out the wrong signals, it's best probably to keep your knickers on and not get into bed with him.
Are you done?
Well, the BBC did apologize if anybody took offense. You know, the classic non-apology apology.
But not apology, the apology. We didn't mean to offend anybody.
We're sorry if anybody was offended.
Right. Mm-hmm. Holy shit. Oh, my God. What? You know, I picked up these guys yesterday from the airport. And you know me, I am not one to hold back on anybody, especially when they say something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I take great pride in calling to attention to people who are idiots, calling it using to their attention. And so these guys from the UK got in my cab, and, you know, they were asking about L.A. and stuff, and they were asking about Compton, and say, so do we need to be strapped? And I said, okay, first of all, why would you be going anywhere near Compton? And second of all, using the word strapped, are you saying, would you have said that to a white cab driver? Or even mentioned Compton? Are you saying that because I'm a black cab driver, therefore you feel that, you know, everybody that's from L.A. that is black is from Compton?
Oh, Jesus. No, it's just all they've ever heard of.
You know? And so, of course,
I mean, there was that. A few years ago, wasn't there that little cheerleader kind of B movie with Kirsten Dunst, and there were some beautiful.
Yep. Let's see. What is it? Bring It On.
Yeah. I know. We watched it here because we had, you know, teens and preteens at the time, and everybody knew about Compton then.
Jose Julian. Okay. Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, yeah, and you, like you said, you have these beautiful black women of color, period, and then the old Kirsten Dunst, who pains me just to see her trying to attempt to act. And so, and it's, well, lately I've been tired of people saying, especially white people, and so I say stuff to people. Oh, today was a classic. This was a Lulu. I was had picked up these women from one of the clinics at Cedars-Sinai, one of their cancer clinics, and they were asking me to drive them around so they could see where the hospital was and in relation to their hotel and blah, blah, blah. So there's this four-way stop. And it was my turn to go, but there was a guy in the crosswalk, and out here you got to be very careful with people in crosswalks because you will get a ticket. So I stopped for the man to walk across the street, and this guy was starting to yell at me, called me everything but a child of God, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay. So
everything but a child of God. Yeah, because, you know, you're definitely.
Everything but a child of God.
Yeah, because you ain't one
everything.
Of them.
Mm-hmm. No. So just
probably Muslim, that, too.
Yeah, I'm a Kenyan Muslim socialist atheist.
Mm-hmm. Lesbian.
With Ebola.
I think you've got the basis covered.
I have another story about Ebola, too. So anyway, so just so happens there's two lanes, and he gets, you know, all his blustering and rushing, of course he gets stopped, at the stop sign, and I pull up alongside of them, and I tell the lady, oh, this is going to be so much fun. So I pulled up, I rolled down my window, and I said, I am so sorry, kind sir. Please forgive me. Because I stopped because I didn't want to hit the person in the crosswalk, and I am sorry if it upset you. Right. Bob, he completely lost it. He started yelling at me, stop mouthing off at me. I said, well, sir, I'm not mouthing off at you. I'm just apologizing for my obviously ill conduct.
Well, you know, what's it say in Proverbs that kind words to an enemy is like heaping hot coals on their head?
Yeah. And then I went on to say, and I said, well, you know what, hon? I hope whatever is troubling you, it stops because obviously you're having a bad day. And I just hope that it doesn't continue.
Well, you know, see, that's the difference between you and me. I got rather upset with somebody on Facebook last night. And I concluded by wishing them a catastrophic transmission failure in the fast lane of the freeway at about 5:17 p.m.
Well, you know what? But see, typically that is my response.
But you got to understand. You got to really work to get me there.
Oh yeah. See, if I don't even want to know what the circumstances were that you resorted to saying something like that, because that's not you.
Well, it was a Facebook post. You never know what's going to get people's interest on Facebook. So I was on Facebook, and I put up this post, and it was just a simple observation that since we're talking about immigration, the greatest immigration blunder that the United States has ever made was allowing a woman named Elisa Rosenbaum into the country. Elisa Rosenbaum is the real name of Ayn Rand. And I later said that I consider it worse than letting Typhoid Mary in.
Or Nazi war criminals.
So that discussion cruised along for a little while. And then this guy who's not even, you know, one of my friends or anything, pops in and starts kind of agrees that Ayn Rand was a horrible human being, but then used gender-based disparaging terms, which I despise.
Oh.
He referred to...
He couldn't have a solid argument. He had to go for...
Well, no, he was making a solid argument, but he just casually tossed these words out there that are, you know, hate words, at least within the confines of American English. And I said, you know, I think we can deconstruct this awful woman without recourse to gender hate words.
Right.
And so guy comes back and says and begins to lecture me about how by God I've been to MIT and then uses the phrase you people.
Oh no.
Yes.
He didn't do the you people thing.
Yep, really? Yep. We got a you people.
Yeah. That's one of those things when people say you people, and it's used to refer to, you know, it's usually referring to people I don't know who look like me. And so... Because I have to, every so often, I have to catch Jan. I mean, she's gotten a hell of a lot better in almost three years that we've been together. But, you know, every so often, I'm like, don't say it. I see your mouth about to form it. Don't you say it. Or not you people, but those people. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
Not wink, wink.
And so, you know, I went off a little bit.
Well, you know what? I there's only so much that I can take also, and I'm trying very desperately at times to be a kinder, gentler Tracy Porter. And that, you know, doesn't work out a lot because somebody will say something so ridiculously stupid. Like, for example, the whole Ebola thing. I was at the nail shop a couple of weeks ago getting, you know, my nails done. And it was on those rare occasions that Jan and I were actually at the shop at the same time, because typically our schedule don't allow for it. And so they were asking Jan about, you know, going to, you know, asking where she's been and where I've been. And I said I've been to, you know, London and Paris, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, if my next trip, even the country, will either be South America or South Africa or something. And then they started all about Ebola. Not Jan, because she knows better.
Right.
And, you know, well, you should get Ebola. And I'm like, because they were talking about going to Vietnam because that's where they're from. And finally I said, and Vietnam is such a garden spot, I have to get shots to go there too. You know. So that shut them up. I can't stand it. I cannot stand. And it's like, you know, you guys are Asian. How dare you come here and talk about, you know, something that you don't even know about. So when I said, well, you know, if I go to, you know, wherever I leave the country, I'm going to get shots to go. I'll have to go shots to go there too. They got real quiet and they kind of pissed them off when I said that. But
well, people don't like having their bigotries challenged.
You know, and I like I said, those are one of those things I don't like a bigot. And I've had my moments when I've said bigoted things. Who hasn't? If anybody says that they've never said intentionally or unintentionally anything bigoted, I challenge them. I will absolutely challenge them. But it's even more so when it comes to people of African descent. And the fact that people feel that they could say these things and, you know, I'm just supposed to sit back and just say, oh, yeah, well, that's the way it is. No. Not so much.
No.
Because that's not the way it is. Like, you know, this whole outcry about these people freaking out here in the United States about Ebola and this and that. I'm like, you know, how many people have died from Ebola in the last, what, 5 years? Or however long this outbreak has been going on. And, of course, they were all black. But as soon as the white people start getting sick, it's like all of a sudden now we got to do something about Ebola. Really? It just reminds me of the AIDS epidemic. Same thing. Gay people and drug users and people who were sharing needles and all these other things, people were dying left and right, getting sick, dying, and whatnot, and so forth. But it was okay because it was just drug users and those gay people. And if you got a black drug user who was gay, then you got the, you know, then you got the, what is it, the double, not the trifecta, but whatever.
The daily double?
It was even better. The daily double, thank you. So it was even better because you got rid of, you know, they're black and they're, actually that's the trifecta because they're black, they're drug user, and they're gay. So that is a trifecta, yeah? And
that's
so,
a trifecta.
That was a trifecta. But until, you know, the straight white people started getting sick, uh-oh, we got to do something about this. Really?
It's not the size of it.
You have to do something now? Not that because just on general, just because of your fellow Americans, you know, regardless of their, you know, their sexual preference or what have you, just because that was happening, just because there were people dying and getting sick and all that, you shouldn't do anything about it. It was just when white people started getting sick. Oh no, we got to do something about this. Really? Really, player? Really?
I can't believe you noticed that.
You know, and see, and this is, again, like we always say, the dog whistle politics, the dog whistle things that people are supposed to, like my color of people aren't supposed to hear, but we hear it loud and clear. You know, like when you call a person a thug,
yeah,
you know what they're saying, or when you call our president, you know, our president is shucking and jiving, you know, and Obama's baby mama drama.
Oh, for
and
God's
stuff
sakes.
Like that. You know, you do not refer to SCOTUS as Obama's baby's mama. How dare you? So, I have a question. Speaking of our president, tell me, what did you think of his immigration reform speech?
I think it's tepid.
Tepid?
Yeah, I think it's tepid. I think it is the absolute least we could possibly do. Yeah.
But it's something.
It's not what it should be. It's not the immigration apocalypse that the right wing is having a hissy about.
That was my next question. But with that said, how do you like the reaction of the white? I keep saying the right wing. It won't come out right wing.
It's all over the place. It's beautiful. It's beautiful of its sort. For instance, I've got a story here, Tracy. There was an outraged white dude in Norfolk, Virginia.
Norfolk?
Uh-huh. In a neighborhood known as Ghent, G-H-E-N-T. And he protested the executive order on immigration by hanging a Nazi flag outside his home.
Oh, okay.
Now, here's the fun part. The guy who did it is named Dr. William Wheeler.
So one of his neighbors came, because
that's a really offensive thing, hanging a Nazi flag. I mean, you can't look at that.
Hanging a Dixie flag.
You can't see that and see anything but hate. I mean, it's the epitome of anti-American. You know, right up there with the Confederate battle flag. Maybe even more so.
It's more so because that's our heritage and it's our culture.
So a woman named Beth Booker, who is one of his neighbors, said I wanted to have a dialogue with him as to why he hung that hate flag out in the neighborhood. It's amazing how somebody can have so much hate in them and feel it's okay to express themselves. Granted, there's freedom of speech. He can do or say whatever he wants to, but I think you need to have some respect for people in this country, and that flag represents nothing but hate. So instead, well, you know, he gave her a ration of shit for it. Then off camera, he said some reporters that he intended to shock people by using the flag.
Okay.
He said, I'm not a Nazi. I'm half Jewish. I hung the flag after watching President Obama last night. Obama usurped his oath of office. I wanted people to be shocked because I am offended. Apparently, okay, they have since taken the flag down, but, you know, but that presents other questions.
Wait,
it's not a there's more thing. I just wanted to do a little thought work through this. So the day after the announcement of the immigration executive order, this goober, Dr. William Wheeler, hangs a Nazi flag outside his home. Am I to understand that he just happened to have a Nazi flag laying around?
Exactly.
Or can you get on the interweb tubes and go to NaziFlagsRUs.com and have one overnighted to you?
Mm-hmm. And therein is where the question lies. It's like, so do you just have Nazi paraphernalia, you know, lying around your house like you said, or did you go on to the interweb?
Right, and that's the kind of question that doesn't get asked. Why'd you happen to have a Nazi flag laying around, Doc?
In the first place. And that half-fact, well, I'm half-Jewish, I just wanted people. That would be right up there with Alex, who is half-black and half-white, half-German. his father's German-Irish. So what is that, a quarter German, quarter Irish, whatever, if you want to keep count with that kind of mess. That would be right up there with him if somebody got upset with, you know, he got upset with something happening.
You know what? I'm half.
He hung a Confederate flag.
Tracy, I'm half female. My mother was a female. Does that mean when I get aggrieved, I'm going to run a ball gown up the goddamn flagpole?
I like to see that where you live. Oh, no, I got one. Speaking of, never thought about half woman, you know, but I have to tell you this one. I picked up this customer last week, and he was so very, very good. He's the sweetest, gayest man ever. He kept saying, well, you know, I'm not gay, I'm straight. I said, baby, you're about as straight as I, if you're straight, I'm a blonde hair, blue, white, white girl. Right? And so he started cracking up. And so we got to talking about my other gay male friends that whenever I say, you know, because I said something and I said, refer to the vagina as a vajayjay.
Oh, no. No, I don't think that's on Tracy. Well, maybe it is. We're having some interesting buffering problems this evening. Well, darn it, stand by a minute. Okay, so let's see if we can get this thing going again. Are you there, Tracy?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Fine. There was.
Where did I leave off? What was the last thing you heard?
The last thing I heard was the JJ.
Okay. You know, so I about the thing I said that if you're straight, I'm a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, white girl. Did I say? Did you hear the part?
Yes.
Okay. So and he asked me what a vajayjay was, and I said, it's a vagina. And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah. And he's like, well, why would you call it a vajayjay? I said, all of my, just about every male, gay male friend that I have, if you say the word vagina, they hold their hands up to their ears, and they start screaming, la, 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 like they can't hear, they don't want to hear that word, vagina, right? And so I said to him, I said, I don't understand what gay men have a problem with, why they have such problems with vaginas. They came out of one, didn't they? And when I said that, he almost lost it. He's like, and that's what made me think. Well,
just pull over. Let me out of the car.
No, he laughed so hard. He's like, oh, my God, you're so right. Because it wasn't until I said it just like that that it didn't even dawn on him. I said, you know, I don't have a problem with, you know, me being a lesbian. I don't have a problem with a penis because if it had not been for a penis, I wouldn't be here either. Okay, so there has to be, you know, at some point back in the day. I mean, now we don't need.
I don't think we're talking about a gay, straight, or a male, female thing. I think we're talking.
No, no.
I think we're talking about the, and this is an appropriate topic for the week, given the week. We are talking about the fundamental, essential, prudish, puritanical. So hung up that we can barely breathe nature of this country. We are, you know, we're not free of our puritanical roots. You know, those same impulses that cause people to be put on dunking stools and have rotten vegetables thrown at them in stocks or be pressed to death with big rocks, it's still with us.
I mean, hell, I was just thinking it's so funny. Because, you know, I grew up in the Missionary Baptist Church. You know, I was a proper church girl. And it's so funny because it took me a while to even say the word vagina. Okay? I'm like, you know, and because of the way I was, and, you know, it's so, what tickles me about, you know, the white conservatives and the right wingers, if they stopped and actually stopped looking at color and started actually listening to what a lot of black ministers are talking about, especially in some black churches, especially like when I was a kid, younger, and not so much now, but when I was a kid, holy crap, you don't, how can, they are crazy conservatives. Like you said, just, you know, just, you can't even look at a woman the wrong way, or, you know, I was still of the assumption until I got into a certain age, that if you went, you know, used the public restroom, you could get pregnant. That's just how bad it was. We all know that that is no longer the case. But still, it's like you said, it's that we're so hung up on sex and human sexuality and all this other stuff that we just, like you said, they're so uptight that they can barely breathe.
Well, and oh my God, I've got, you know, there are so many examples out there of the hung up in this, and the problem is it's really, really unhealthy. I mean, it
is. It causes so many problems. It's like, you know, especially when it comes to women's reproductive health. And these people are so hung up on what they think, like, Planned Parenthood is about, when...
All of this stuff has very little to do with actually knowing anything. It's just ex post facto justification for bigotry. Mm-hmm. Since you're in L.A. and this is an L.A. story, let me share another dandy with you.
Okay.
So I heard about this story a while back. The story comes from KPCC. And it's the story of a guy named Dr. Stan Katz, who in 2013 testified in a trial over civil damages for a 9-year-old girl who was repeatedly raped by a boy at one of the schools, another student.
Mm-hmm.
The LAUSD, Unified School District.
LA Unified School District, okay.
Yeah. Hired this creep, and he got on the stand and he testified because this little girl, 9 years old, had an IQ between 64 and 70.
And you have to explain that to me, because I've never been sure about, you know, IQ.
Yeah, that's not very high.
That's not very high. Okay.
Yeah, she has intellectual functional limitations.
Okay. So she's a special needs child.
Most likely, yes.
Okay.
And so there was a suit for damages against the LAUSD. The LAUSD argued that they shouldn't be responsible for any damages. It was just, you know, one of their students is all.
Oh.
And so Dr. Katz got on the stand and said, this is tough. He testified that because the girl, the little girl, the 9-year-old little girl, was developmentally delayed and had a low IQ, he said her developmental delay acted as a protective factor.
Wait, what?
There's a relationship between intelligence and depression. What happens is the more you think about things, you can ruminate, you can focus on things, you can look at the complexities of the matter and become less depressed. So because she may be less intelligent than a general education student, she's going to suffer less depression because of it. That was the question that was put to him. He said, very possible, yes. So this guy actually, he was a therapist for the LAUSD, and he basically said, girls with low IQs who are raped don't suffer as much trauma as girls who are raped who have higher IQs.
Okay. So in other words, when I was sexually molested by my stepfather, since I have a relatively high IQ, it's okay. I'll be, it's okay because I'm, I
no, you've got a high IQ, so it's going to bother you.
It's going to bother me.
But this little girl who's 9 years old and was repeatedly raped by a boy at the school,
and how old
on the school premises.
How old was this boy? And did they know about it? Kind of like, you know.
Don't matter.
How they knew about
it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Because you might be interested to know that the LAUSD walked. Not a dime did they have to pay in the trial.
I'm not surprised. Because right now they're in the midst of this horrible, the Miramonte school scandal when, you know, parents were actually went to the school district, to the principal, to, you know, whomever would listen about what this man was doing to their kids. It's kind of like how they were, this man had been moved from different schools. Like, you know, back in the day when they would move the priests that were molesting children to different churches, usually in low-income neighborhoods or immigrant neighborhoods where nobody's going to talk. And it was the same with this guy. But see, they can't get away with this one. There's no way. They're trying, you know, because their damages will be paid. It's just at this point, not if, but how much.
Right.
And that's what they're fighting for right now, not to pay so much in damages. But to me, that's the kind of shit that is just like, really? When you hear, when it's a child, children are special, special people. And especially special needs children. And coming from somebody, I mean, I don't work. I mean, I do transport special needs kids, and I know what these kids go through because they are special needs children. And they are actually ultra sensitive. For example, there's a young man. It's on those occasions where I can't drive. He's one of my regular students, and the last few weeks, you know, I got sick, food poisoning, car got hit, you know, just a near, you know, horrible hay fever. I said to somebody, what's fucking next, locust? But anyway, I digress. On those rare, there was an occasion that I was not at school and I couldn't take him to school. And apparently, because he's highly functioning autistic and he's very smart, but he's a 16-year-old boy, but with the mentality of maybe a 10-year-old when it comes emotionally. So apparently he was running late one day, and the driver that took my place yelled at him. And so he started crying. And the driver's response was, you're not a little girl, stop crying.
Oh,
he no longer works in the program.
Good. Good.
And because, and you know, see, the thing is now, especially since, you know, my wife is the director. And like I said, I have a special love for my students. So if anybody does anything to my students, it's war. And so I personally, cause they didn't know when I was coming back, and that happened the day before I came back. So the next morning, when I went to pick Jake up, his brother was downstairs with him, or his older brother, waiting for the driver, but it was me, so everything was fine. And then when I heard about what happened, and it wasn't just from Jake, it was from the other students who I picked up before Jake, and they could not wait to tell Miss Tracy what happened. And so then I relayed the information to my supervisor, who happens to be my wife. And so, yes, he no longer works with special needs kids, because if you feel as though you can talk to a child that way, then you should not be dealing with special needs kids. You cannot. And so for this asshole to say that, well, because she has special needs and she is less likely to have depression because she doesn't know how to deal with it or whatnot. He needs a resounding, like my grandmother used to say, I'm going to put my foot so far up your ass that they're going to need a pitchfork and an excavation crew to get it out. And that's my response to the guy who said that she, you know, because she has special needs, she won't have it. She won't have the same effect as a quote-unquote reaction as the same, a quote-unquote normal child. Where do they find these people?
Oh, Jesus.
Where do they find... It was so funny. What was I watching? I was watching some lawyer show, The Good Wife, whatever. I don't know. Pick one, whatever. And one of the things that they were talking about on this show was how be careful about expert witnesses. And be careful about who's paying them.
Well, expert witnesses are just, you know, people who are hired to say a certain thing.
They have to say what the lawyer who hired them wants them to say.
Right, because you're not going to be put on the stand if you say something that's contrary to what the lawyer wants to hear. It's part of the civil process.
And so, as a result, you know, you get these whatever. But for this man, and he's a therapist, what frightens me the most, it's the fact that he's a therapist.
Oh.
So what happens when a child who has gone through what this young girl has gone through comes to him for help? What's his response? That, to me, is worse than anything that I can even imagine hearing. I just, like I said, as a survivor of sexual abuse on more than one occasion. That's the thing. I mean, let's not even, you know, we got, you know, the abuse that I suffered from the age of 13 to 18 from my stepfather, you know, the gang rape when I was 16, on my 16th birthday, and let's not even go on into date rapes when it's just so much easier just to just lay there and pretend rather than to fight. And even if you wanted to fight and say that this person attacked you, it's a, you know, that's back with the he say, she say mess. So you're in, you know, being a woman, not so easy when it comes to trying to, you know, get help when it comes to being sexually, you know, molested or attacked or assaulted. And so when I hear stuff like this, to me, even though I know there's a heaven, you know, in my belief there's heaven and hell, and either going to heaven or you're going to hell, and that's it, but there has to be, if in fact there is a heaven or a hell, there has to be a special place in hell where it's exceptionally hot and the little minions and demons
are... Oh, I know.
Yeah,
see, that's the problem. I every now and then I keep thinking hell would be a real handy thing to have, but...
Right. There should be a way for people like you and me to banish such, because, you know, we're fine upstanding citizens, and we only have the best interest in mind for our common man. So, of course, we're going to go, you know, for the jugular. But if there was a way for me to say there's a special place in hell for you, and I can assuredly know that there was a special place in hell, like I said, that was beyond hot, was like nuclear hot, or as our former President Bush would say, nuclear. Hot, and then all the little demons have their own, you know, special pitchfork where they're, you know, poking you 24/7 and ripping open the wounds and pouring alcohol in the wounds and then pouring salt on top of that. Or my personal favorite, because now I'm going into that torture mode, for all people, any man that sexually molested or assaulted or hurt a child or a woman or whomever, to me, they should have, somebody should be able to take a very dull potato peeler to his penis.
Oh, you are getting creative, aren't you?
Yeah. Oh, honey, these are those kind of things that you think about, because trust me, those are the thoughts that I had about my stepfather. A very dull potato peeler. And just start to, and I'm sorry for all my male friends in the horn audience.
Yeah,
because
see, some of us are kind of cringing now.
Yeah, they're cringing, but I'm not done. And give me a minute, get your hockey pucks out, because I'm not quite done. Because then after, like I said, after we do the potato peeler, then we get the alcohol, the rubbing alcohol out, and then the salt.
What, no turpentine?
No, no. Does turpentine hurt worse than alcohol?
Always heard it did.
Well, since you, I don't know, for I know alcohol hurts like a motherfucker when you get scratched and you get alcohol, anything that's, you know, stingy on a scratch or a sore. So I'm going to go with the alcohol because I know that hurts. I know how much alcohol stings. So alcohol and then the salt on top after you pour the alcohol. That's just me.
Yeah, but see, salt advances the healing process.
Oh, damn, that's right. Okay. Then we got to come up with something else other than salt. I know, maybe gravel. Ooh, sand. Finally.
Okay, Tracy, dear, this is approaching revenge porn.
Okay, I'm sorry. But, you know, you get my idea. You get the gist. But it's just like I said, when it comes to people who make light of the suffering, or they say, well, she asked for it, or, you know, it's just boys being boys, and like that asshole that you were talking about that said, you know, she should have known because he's a man, and therefore he should be able to do whatever he wants to do because, well, you know, he's a man. And you being a woman should understand that. And just, if it happens to you, just buck it up, bitch. You should be okay with it because he's a man. And so that's one of those things where I just lose it. And that's why a lot of times I don't watch the news. And I don't, you know, I get a lot of my news. I don't watch the news because it's just much better for me to read the news. Because if I hear what people are saying, like on those rare occasions that I'm actually, my TV, actually, like I watch stuff on Fox, not the news on Fox, but the programs on Fox. And sometimes, you know what happens? You fall asleep and then you wake up and the news is on. And then you start screaming in the night, realizing that, oh, my God, I'm watching Fox News or phone news or what have you. So, but I don't know. Anyway, enough of that. So what are you doing for Thanksgiving?
Don't know yet. It's kind of up in the air.
Yeah, we're gonna keep a very low key this year. This will be the first year. We're just going to have Jan, my son, and myself. That's it. No friends, no family. We're going. The only thing I am doing, there is a LGBTQ senior citizen home out here in L.A. Because, of course, you know, it's hard enough being gay, but then you're gay and older and, you know, for whatever, of course, there's still discrimination. You know, we have the senior citizens who get into senior living homes because they're gay. Or they're transgender, or, you know, queer, or whatever. And so we have a LGBTQ senior citizen home out here in L.A. So I'm making my world-famous dressing because we're going to have, like, three seatings for dinner. And I'm going to make dressing. And I'm going to be part of the first seating, because I think there's going to be three seatings. So Alex and I are going to go and do that, and Jan is going to be at home being the perfect housewife.
Oh.
Oh.
Well, I'm toying with the idea of smoking a turkey. Depending
what?
On the...
Not frying, not going to fry a turkey and put your house on fire?
No, I'm going to take... Yeah, I'm going to take a pass on the domestic arson. Because
awesome.
we have predictions here. We have predictions here, Tracy, for a high of 39 on Wednesday with snow and a high on Thursday of 36 with snow.
Oh damn!
So
you want me to tell you what our
no, I really no, honest to Jesus, I really don't. I don't want to hear about no. I don't want no balmy 75. I don't want no balmy 83 degrees and hanging out by the shrimp truck. No, I don't.
82.
Now see, just call to be mean to me.
I love you. I'm just trying to get you to come out to visit. That's all. And if I figure, if I can tell you,
I want to. By the way, you got a note from Devin here. He says, "Okay, I'm not having sex anymore. Period. You've scared me, Tracy. I value what parts I have left." That makes it sound like there may be some missing already, Devin. And I don't know how to feel about that.
You know, Devin, you can have sex. Just be sure you have sex with somebody that's a willing participant.
There's that whole consent thing.
That whole consent thing, and don't say, you know, oh, well, I thought she was 18. No. I tell my son, you know.
I thought she was conscious.
Right, exactly. I thought she was breathing, you know. I don't understand the compliment. But I told my son, once he turns 18, you know, besides the fact that I would give him condoms every time he went out the door, I said, check ID, because now you're 18 years old. And if you run across, oh, God, the standoff is still going on, I might not be able to go to school today. There was a police chase that wound up in Culver City. And I still see the police presence, and I might not be able to go to school because they've blocked off, apparently this guy was, running from the cops from, I know you don't know anything about like where Palmdale and all that, but let's just say it was like a 100-mile high speed chase. And it wound up in Culver City, which is right by my school. I was hoping I could use that as an excuse. To tell you the truth, I didn't want to go to school tonight anyway. But it looks like, damn it, they opened up the street. I'm like, damn it. Oh, well, I guess I have to get my education. But anyway. Oh, yeah, so the guy he barricaded himself in a house or an apartment on a rooftop in Culver City. And they, you know, had the police out and stuff like that. So I guess it's over with because I don't see the cops anymore. Oh, well. But anyway, I hope you have – I'm going to let you go because I've been hoarding, you know, holding up the phone. So you got – I want you to have a pleasant, even though it's going to be cold as a witch's tit in the brass bra.
Yeah, see, I can't say something like that.
I want you to have a really wonderful Thanksgiving.
Yeah, thank you. And by the way, you got a note in from Marty. Who likes to play inside baseball. He said, did the driver use Highway 14 to the 5 to the 210 or what?
He used, from what I understand, he went from the 14 to the 5 to the 405. And I think at some point he got off and went through Beverly Hills and Hancock Park and whatnot and so forth and then wound up in Culver City. Basically, and from what I understand, where he wound up in Culver City was actually closer to West LA College than to where I am, because I'm in part of, and Marty knows, I'm over off of Slauson, I go to Antioch, and where it's off of Slauson and Buckingham. So apparently we're okay. So they've gotten the all clear and all that. But yeah, he did the four. He was very spot on. He did the 14 to the 5 to the 405. Then at some point got off and then got back on the freeway.
You Angelinos.
We know our freeways. You can live and die by the freeways if you're not careful. You know. You can be stuck in for the rest of your life on the freeway and never get anywhere if you don't know where you're going. So anyway,
and we've got a highway named after Robert C. Byrd, and it's a limited access.
Robert who?
Robert C. Byrd, you know, Senator Byrd. Yeah.
Why does that name sound familiar?
You know, former senator, you know, elder statesman, constitutional scholar, yada yada. And the highway's named after him, so we just call it the Freebird. God, you made me work for that one, Tracy.
I'm sorry. That's my fault for not. And he's listening to the show more often, so I can get some. So I can get some of the stuff he talks about.
That's okay. It's being appreciated in the chat room, Tracy. You have yourself a wonderful evening, and if I don't talk to you before then, a very happy, happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Turkey Day to you, my dear. And you know, I'll try not to walk around in shorts and flip flops.
I'm gonna hang up.
Take care, my love. We'll talk again, hopefully sooner than later.
Absolutely. our best to everybody out there.
Thank you, my love. We'll talk soon.
See you, Tracy. Bye now. Tracy, the lady cab driver, calling from, yes, the L.A. area to torment me. Although, you know, we got up to like 66 degrees today. It was really gray and weird and windy. Lots of people in West Virginia out of power today because Appalachian Power, who coal keeps the lights on, except when the wind blows or the rain falls or the snow falls or the sun shines or whatever. The wind done blowed down a whole lot of power lines overnight. A lot of people out of power around here. We managed to hang on, luckily, mercifully. But it's going to get colder and it'll be ugly Wednesday and Thursday. But nonetheless, you know, maybe just, you know, kind of get a turkey, put it on the smoker, put the hickory smoke to it, you know, nice low heat, lots of smoke, yummy, yummy, mummify it in bacon. Bacon, right. And thanks very kindly to Ron and to John, who have now collectively taken our fundraising goal for the evening number down to $65, which is very doable. Meanwhile, I will note that Gary, our buddy labor man, is encouraging folks to try the fresh, wonderful Northern California-grown pistachios that are offered via Sparky's Pistachio or Smoky Ghost Pepper Cheese Challenge for any $100 contribution that comes through. Your choice of a multiplicity of flavors of fresh Northern California, locally grown, locally packaged, locally produced pistachios, or the, oh my God, this really is hot, Smoky Ghost Pepper Cheese. I favor that stuff on a big grilled sourdough grilled cheese. Yum, yum. Thank you very kindly, Thomas, our buddy Jug of Punch, taking it down to $55. Much appreciated. And let's go over to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? Oh, Gizmo line. Just a second. Let me make sure I got this right. Hang on. Wait, just 1 minute. For some reason or another, stand by. I hear you, Bill. Just stand by. For some reason, the Bluetooth dropped. There we go. Are you there, Bill? You will be in a minute.
Yeah,
there you are.
There you go. How the hell are you?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
It was a great night with Tracy. It's good to hear.
It's always good to hear from Tracy.
But you guys are talking about the Schlossen cutoff. That's an old Johnny Carson line.
Yeah, you go to the Schlossen cutoff and get out of your car and cut off your Schlossen.
Exactly. You've watched Carson before.
Oh,
because he used that a lot. Because L.A., it was one thing when it was people going down the side of a hill. Man, that was a L.A. Confidential. You ever read that?
Never read it. Saw the movie. Thought the movie was pretty good.
Oh, yeah. The books were good. He's a funny, not a funny writer, but he's a good one. What's gotten me lately is in the last 2 days is an old radio show I can get on the internet, and it features Orson Welles and Harry Lime, if you know who Harry Lime was.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie, The Third Man?
I want to say I did, but I can't. I don't think I did. I'm familiar with the title, but.
Yeah, you should try to get it. It's set in Vienna. It was filmed in Vienna right after the war.
Oh, yeah. Yes, I have seen it. Yes, I have. Orson Welles.
Joseph Cotton.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, Joe, right, with the scene with what, the Ferris wheel and the.
Yeah, that's where he and then and Cotton are in a Ferris wheel. Yeah, that's the one scene of the Trotter wheel. And I'm thinking that means father, Trotter. I'm just guessing. I don't speak Austrian, you know. But my problem is that one-fourth of me is Austrian. No doubt about that. My great-grandfather was a Roman Catholic priest, and he was working in the coal fields in Pennsylvania. And he met and married a housekeeper, and that's where my grandfather came from. And my grandfather went back to... After he was born here, he went back overseas, and at age 12, he came back here. And he did a stint of that wonderful job of coal mining. And said the hell with that, and he came here and worked for the New York Central, climbing inside of the smokestacks, steam-driven trains, and scraping out the creosote. It kind of cut into his lifetime, did it?
I can imagine, yeah.
55, I think, when he died.
Oh, man.
My father was 57, and I had a heart attack when I was 51. But things are different. You can survive that stuff today. But that damn Ziegler music just drives me crazy. You ever hear that scene? You've heard if you've seen the movie.
Yes, yes.
But there's something about that. Vienna is a city that... You know, if you're a student of World War One, you and I both are. Max Hastings, the English writer, has a very good study of the war, of the first, you know, and up until about December of 1915, or January of 1915. And the Austrians were just crazy. They had to go to war with Serbia because Serbia was threatening their southern flank, you know. And and the Archduke that was killed, he was a, according to Hastings, the guy's reputation was he would have worked, went out of his way to avoid war. Because somehow or other, the Austrians really thought they had an army and a half, you know? And they had a bunch of Germans and Austrians, but they also had Czechs and some other people who didn't want any part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, you know?
Yeah. Oh, you mentioned a zither. I got one for you real quick. What's the definition of perfect pitch?
Will you throw something out the window?
Now, tossing the accordion into the dumpster so it misses the sides, demolishes the banjo, and smashes the bodhran.
Well, I believe it was a city full of, was a city full of great accordion players. Frankie Yankovic, for instance, was a polka leader. Cleveland had a lot of polka music and banjos. I'm surprised because banjo was a real big part of bluegrass, is it not?
Oh, yeah, but there's just... Something there is that doesn't love a banjo, with all apologies to Robert Frost.
Yeah, well, banjos, New Orleans jazz groups used a lot of banjo, because they could be heard, you know, unamplified guitars were very hard to hear. Ferg
turned into a decent little guitar player, and at one point he was, hey, Dad, I want a banjo. And I said, I ain't going to do it. Nope, you can go out there and get a job. You can buy 100 banjos. I ain't doing it.
Well, how about you got to have a 12-string guitar.
He does.
That was the addition I lived through that folk thing.
But he doesn't like the 12-string. I mean, he's got pretty good pitch, so tuning is not a big problem. But I don't know. stringing and tuning a 12-string is like changing shoelaces for a centipede.
Yeah, it is. A buddy of mine could play 12 pretty well, but he went out. He has a degree in philosophy, but he writes books about fly fishing. Yeah.
Well, degrees in philosophy will take you to that. I mean, I think, what, Steve Martin's degree is in philosophy?
Yeah, yeah. God, whatever happened to him? Is he retired? Or?
Oh, no, he's still out there doing stuff. He's just, you know.
Me and Saturday Night Live were strangers. I saw a version of Saturday Night Live week after week after week, and we were considered the prize of Saturday Night Live playing. We played so much, 20 years in one place in the University Circle, Bob. Not far from where you'd still find a place. They got new ownership, but it's still there. But I'll tell you what, I go down to University Circle, and it's like a different world from when I first went there in 1960, 61.
Oh, I can imagine.
The schools and the hospitals. The neighborhood we used to call Little Italy has so many Asians in it that I'd love to see some guy who, you know, some old Italian guy who died in 1955 and watch him get dropped into that neighborhood. And see his reaction to it, you know, because all these foreigners would, and of course, if you saw the movie about Danny Green, you know, To Kill the Irishman, you've seen that. And I read the book long before the movie came out, and read the book. Hell, I knew some of this guy, they ran the numbers racket. Was a friend of my uncle's, so I kind of knew a little bit about that stuff. Just, you know, and the numbers, King was a Hungarian guy. I can't think of his name right now. It's really bothering me that I can't think of names and that so quick. Did you see what happened to our star wannabe quarterback here?
No, I did notice they won and, beat Atlanta, was it?
Yeah, well, that shocks me.
Well, the Browns are 7-4 now. That shocks me.
Yeah, well, remember, Bob, when I grew up, they were a world championship team when I was a child. And,
What happened to the QB?
Johnny, touchdown. He got into some kind of an altercation somewhere with somebody about 2 o'clock Saturday morning. And that kind of kills me. I mean, Paul Browns took, well, when they played in Cleveland, Paul would take these guys to a downtown hotel. And they'd watch a movie and they'd eat breakfast together and then go to work.
Well, that was back when you could maintain control over, yeah.
Yeah. Because that was a peen thing, the way he ran it, and he was an old-fashioned kind of a person, but he was, you know, the thing about him, he wasn't a racist, or he was a football player. He was a football coach, and he didn't give a damn if you were from Mars, if you could play the game, and he had one guy got into trouble, he had a DUI accident, and Paul shipped him off to Chicago, and he's in the Hall of Fame right now, the guy that he set there, but he just didn't. He liked to keep a clean house if he could, but it's a different era, a different time, place. People think differently, you know. That storm in Erie, you know, that went straight down Lake Erie. If the winds changed, people would have had that dump. It's unbelievable how many feet of snow they have in Buffalo. It's just 17, 18, something like that.
Oh, it was crazy.
Oh, sure. Those poor people, I've heard a few talks from local people calling and talking to people up there, and it's insane. I don't think you guys have ever had that kind of a snow on here. You say I'm sitting on top of a mountain.
No, we've had some deep ones, but I don't think, I mean, not in my lifetime, no. Although I did notice the other day, the all-time low temperature for two or three days ago here was 5 in
1964. Good. It's so hot in here, my heat came in and she cranked these thermostats so high I have to keep a window open.
Well, on the other hand, you know, like I said, we were up to 66 today. Well, the high was 72. But tomorrow it drops to 48, then 39 Wednesday, 36 Thursday, and then it climbs back up through the Thanksgiving weekend. But Wednesday and Thursday, when I'll be running back and forth to tend the smoker, no, we'll be somewhere between 35 and 40. So I don't
That's
guess.
That's the benefit of doing that smoker.
Well, so I guess, yeah, so I guess I won't be setting out my my garden chair with my bucket of hickory chunks and just, you know, drinking beer and periodically throwing a chunk into the fire.
Well, that sounds like a great thing. And a lot of guys were doing deep frying on those things.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, because, you know, one drop of rain, one drop of water, that whole damn thing will explode. And then there's the whole business of trying to lower the turkey into it. The oil goes over the top. It all hisses up. Next thing you know, you've got this giant ball of fire, and your house is burnt down. Now, this is a problem because, on the one hand, Bill, I love gizmos. On the other hand, I don't have room for a lot of gizmos. There is now an infrared turkey fryer that is electric.
Ooh.
And there's no oil involved. You set the bird down in there. You put the lid on. You walk away. A couple hours, you come back. It's golden. It's crispy. It's delicious.
What are they getting for that little device?
I think it's north of $75, maybe north of 100.
That would save a lot of people from damn. But you're right about the damn. I mean, I have a French fryer and occasionally I will cut a potato and fry it. You know, cut an Idaho and fry it. And I shouldn't eat the stuff, but. My feeling about that kind of stuff is you're going to eat, get the best one you can. Those frozen french fries, you put them in the oven, are you kidding me?
Yeah. No, that's...
Well,
yeah.
I bought an omelet pan, and my aid, like tomorrow, I'll have a cheese omelet with corned beef. And that'll be how I eat all day long, probably.
Well, smoking a turkey is fun, and it winds up being delicious, and it's moist and juicy and not dry, and you know, especially if you do it with the Foster's beer can, it gets all nice and moist in the middle from the steam, and the outside gets yummy and smoky, and like I said, for the first few hours, I mummify it in bacon. And then a few hours in, I take the bacon off and let the smoke hit the skin directly.
I don't eat much bacon anymore. And the thing is, I hate this bacon the marketed stuff. Amish bacon was the thing to eat up here if you're going to eat it up. You know, Canadian bacon is good, but it's just like ham, is it? I mean, it's... But I've been buying a little bit of pastrami and corned beef once in a while. I'm making omelets with that because I happen to. Everything I like is something I shouldn't eat. So, but right now I'm waiting to get a whole new set of choppers.
Oh.
So I sent you. You know.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear anything about West Virginia. Because that was a standard American elbow on the side, you know.
Well, toothless, shoeless hillbilly.
Yeah, but you know, a lot of guys from West, my God, they'd come up and say something about Ohio or Cleveland or whatever. And it was just you rib each other, you know, and you laugh and say, well, that's it. They used to say, don't try to cross Interstate 75 on the weekend because all the folks were heading for home.
Exactly.
Of course, that had some problems. That was a John Lee Hooker wrote a thing called "The Motor City's Burning," Everybody thinks it came from the 60s. No. It was the 1940s riots that started between workers from different parts of the country with different skin pigmentation. Belle Isle was where it started, a place called Belle Isle in Detroit. It took me a while to get rid of it, to get back to it. Because Detroit has been like a second home to me with playing the Grandy Ballroom job. You know, that was big time for a bunch of Clevelanders to open for Cream and then Steppenwolf and Three Dog Night and then the MC5. And we were booked with Zeppelin, but when I got up there, they told me they had bumped us for a group called Golden Earring. And I didn't mind it. They paid me anyway, so what the hell, you know? But still, to do those kind of jobs and to never get famous was still fun, you know? There's worse ways to make a living than that. That's for damn sure.
Without a doubt. Hey, Bill, I'll tell you what. I hope we'll probably talk before Thanksgiving. I hope you have a good evening. And
you take care.
Stay warm. Take care of yourself.
You too.
Bye-bye. Now. Well, here we are at 5 minutes before the hour. Live shots coming online from inside the courtroom where the announcement will be made. Lots of people outside the Justice Center in St. Louis. Who knows? I'm just jaded and I'm cynical and I don't expect the right thing to happen here. And, you know, again, even if the right thing happened vis-a-vis the grand jury and he was indicted, any hope, I would say hope of a conviction would be, what, 80-20, 90-10 against? Yeah. So that kind of brings More In Monday to a close. We will be back tomorrow evening, of course, with Titanic Tuesday. Still kind of watching the schedule unfold. I mean, if we get all snowed up and stuff, you know, I'm not going to go see the kids or anything. Hell, who knows? I might be on the air Thursday night. But at any rate, probably not. Probably not. But I hope you all will be here tomorrow night and share your thoughts, your ideas. That's what drives all of this in the first place. Thank you for everything you do to make this as much of a pleasure as it is, and it is a pleasure. You have made this community the vibrant, thought-provoking experience that it is. And you keep it going. You do indeed keep it going. We have $55 to go this evening. $55 to go to meet this evening. The fundraising goal has expanded these 3 days to take care of the 2 days probably not on air and finish November to the good. So with $55 to go, it would be great to start with just a $250 goal for tomorrow evening. If you want to help out, you know, the PayPal interface is at headonradionetwork.com. Thanks to all of you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the Horn chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. He popped by the chat room earlier this evening. Hi, John. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Remember, everything that happens here happens by virtue of the White Rose servers and the 12 years now of hard work, uncompensated by Ben Birch. And, of course, thanks always to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And ACACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.